is tithing? Why should we tithe? What does God say about tithing? This is tithing in 40 minutes, all right? So we're here beginning a two-part series called In God We Trust. And if you look at the graphic, In God We Trust, right? There's a little faded letter L just in the middle of God. In God we trust, because one little letter, right, changes everything. Do we put our trust in God, or do we put our trust in gold? So in the next 2 weeks, right, we're going to look at the topic of finances and money, but most importantly, where is our trust? Is it in God or in gold? So if you're joining us live here in the Axis, or you're watching us from our Northeast Centre or West Centre, or if you're watching us online, on Church Online, Facebook Live, or even if you're watching a recorded version of this sermon, I believe as you open up your heart, God will speak to you. So today we're going to talk about money, and when it comes to money and finances and spending, right, all of us all have different habits. For example, my wife, right, she is a shifu, she's a master at getting online discounts. She's a rabbi at this. It's incredible. So she has this strategy where she knows what vouchers will be released to get what cashback and what credit card discounts. So in her Shopee cart, she will add all the things that she needs to buy, add the milk powder, the diapers, the everything, right? It's all in the cart. And she knows that at 12 midnight, certain vouchers will be released, certain credit card discounts will be available. So she waits until 12 midnight, click, 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 click. Boom! Miracle happens. We save a lot of money. It's incredible. So she's so good at this. And some of you are just good at this. Some of us get a cheap thrill, right? That we save certain, we do mental sums of, like, if I go into town at a certain time, right? Do I go in at 5:59? Because at 6 o'clock, right, ERP becomes $3. You know what I mean? So you do mental sums of, hey, which place parking is the cheapest? Some of us, we are really good at this. And some of us are not interested at all. There was this time, right, where the pastors went on a learning trip. And we had an afternoon off, so we all decided to go to a premium factory outlet store. And you can imagine, right? Some people are really excited. Who was excited? The ladies were really excited, right? The female pastors, they were like, wow, because some of the big brands that were going for 70, 80% off. Do you know who else was very excited? Pastor Daniel. Pastor Daniel was very excited when we went there. And he was like, he was going crazy. His eyes were so open. He ran to the map, the directory. He said, oh, where's this store? How many pairs of Levi's jeans do you buy at that time? One or two only, are you sure? I saw you at the counter. Pastor Daniel was very excited. After a while, we began to wonder, no, where's Pastor Jeff? We couldn't find Pastor Jeff. You know where he went? He was so bored, right, that he went back to the car to sleep. All of us were so excited, right? Because it's a huge discussion. Like, he was not interested at all. He went back to the car to sleep. So some of us, like, we really go for, like, to save money, big discounts and all that. Some people are like, oh, come on, just spend the money. Time is money. Don't waste my brain capacity and my time on that. And we all have different approaches to money. Some of us, we live very simply. We stinge on ourselves. But when it comes to loved ones, healthcare, education, some important things in life, we're willing to spend. Some people decide that they want to save money for their retirement so that, you know, they don't have to be a burden to their children, and that, you know, they can release their children in financial freedom so they take care of themselves. Some people decide that I want to spend money now while I'm healthy, because even if I have a big pot of gold waiting for me in my old age, there's no use. I can't enjoy it anymore. It's just money sitting there going to waste. We all have different approaches to money. And can I be honest? There's, in Christendom, right, among believers, right, there's certain types of sermons where we're open for God to speak. For example, if you're in a crossroad of your life deciding, should I take a career switch? Should I make a big decision when it comes to my life? And then you hear a message about discovering God's will for my life. Wow, your heart is open. Say, God, speak to me. Have your way. I surrender. I open up my heart to you. Or maybe you're in a situation where you're struggling with something and you're trying to find all ways and means to overcome, but you can't, and you feel very defeated. And then there's a message about, hey, how can you can have a victory in God in every situation? Wow, your heart is open. You say, God, speak to me. My heart's ready. I'm open. Have your way. But when it comes to money, when it comes to finances, let's be honest. Whether you're a new believer or you're a long-time mature believer, the truth is, many of us have already decided how we want to spend our money. Many of us have already decided our own philosophies, our perspectives, our worldviews towards money. So whether you're a young believer or you're a mature believer, the truth is, when you hear a message about money, the reality is that most of the time, the window that we give to God to speak is just a tiny little bit. We decided how we want to spend our money already, and I can stand here before you over the next 40 minutes, preaching to you the most theologically sound, biblically balanced sermon you'll ever hear, and yet it can do nothing for you if your heart is not open. So right now, even before we dive into the passage today, I want to encourage you. If you have given God a tiny window to speak into your life about money, I want to encourage you to just open this window a little bit wider. Open your heart a little bit wider and let God renew how you view money. Let God's word renew how you decide to view money. And as you open up your heart, you open up your spirit, I believe that God will renew you. God's word will refresh you, and it will renew how you view God, how you view money, and how you even view yourself. The title to this message is Remain in God's Provision, from Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 6 to verse 18. If you're taking notes today, the title of today's message is Remain in God's Provision, from Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 6 to verse 18. The book of Deuteronomy, as an entire book, is like a series of sermons. It's like a series of sermons that reveal the events that have taken place in Israel's history to remind them of what God has done in their past. God took them out of slavery. He took them out of Egypt. He took them out of bondage. God took them out, and then He brought them by pillar of fire by day, pillar of cloud by night. He led them through. And when the Egyptian army came after them, He parted the Red Sea such that they were able to walk through on dry land, and the waves engulfed the Egyptian armies. He brought them out. And when they had nowhere to go in the wilderness for 40 years, God provided for them supernaturally. Their clothes did not wear out. They got food from heaven. God sustained them. So the book of Deuteronomy was written to them, right, as a series of sermons to remind them of all that has happened over the many, many years in their history, because now they were on the fringes. They were ready to enter the promised land. They were on the brink of the promised land, and God was reminding them of their past and reminding them to be faithful in their future. All right, so let's look at these verses. Verses 6 to 9, I'm going to read these verses out so you can follow me along on the screen. Observe the commands of the Lord your God, walking in obedience to Him and revering Him. For the Lord your God is bringing you to a good land, a land with brooks, streams, deep springs gushing out into the valleys and hills. A land with wheat and barley and vines and fig trees, pomegranates, olive oil and honey. A land where bread will not be scarce and you will lack nothing. A land where the rocks are iron and you can dig copper out of the hills. The first thing that we can learn from today, if you're taking notes, is number one, as God provides, we must remember to obey His commands. As God provides, remember to obey His commands. You can write that down. Now listen. These were people, right? As God was speaking, as the word of God was being read out to the people, right? Remember who God was speaking to here. These are people that spent 40 years in the desert. And the land that Moses was describing, right, was not like anything they had ever seen in the desert. Let's look at this land. He says that the Lord your God is bringing you to a good land. Can we show the next few verses, please? A land with brooks and streams and deep springs gushing out. It's like fresh water. They never had fresh water in the desert, but now they have access to fresh water. A land with wheat and barley, vines and fig trees, pomegranates, olive oil and honey. There's produce of the land. There's harvest. And it's not just basic necessities. There's abundance. There's luxurious food. Olive oil and honey and pomegranates. They never experienced any of these things in the desert. And he says, a land where bread will not be scarce, because they came from a place where they did not have any food and God had to provide manna from heaven. And he says, a land where rocks and iron and minerals and metals are plentiful. And if you can bring yourself to that scene, my friends, if you can bring yourself to that scene of Israel, where they came from a place where they had no identity, they were in slavery, they were in bondage, and then for 40 years they were in the wilderness until the older generation had passed away, and this generation had never experienced anything like this. And now they were on the fringes of the promised land, and God was saying, I'm bringing you to this land. And accompanying the description of that wonderful, incredible land was this command, was this one verse reminder. In verse 6 it says, observe the commands of the Lord your God, walking in obedience to Him and revering Him. Now you see, God is saying this. They were on the fringes of the promised land. God saying that, I'm going to bring you this amazing and incredible land that you've never been, you've never seen any of these things before. When you are there, remember to obey my commands. And if you're one of the Israelites, right, you'll be like, of course we'll obey you, God. You're incredible. You're a provider. You're so good to us. You know, thank you for everything. All of this that you're going to give to us, none of it belongs to us. It all belongs to you. And we'll observe every single one of your commands. If you want us to tithe 10%, no problem, because the 100% doesn't even belong to me. Like, what's wrong with, you know, giving away 10%? No problem. And I want us to remember that when God first found some of us, if you're watching this or you're listening to this sermon, when God first found you, right, there's some of us that when God first found us, we had nothing. We didn't have a lot. Maybe you came from a family background that you were in debt. You not just had nothing, but you were in financial debt. Maybe you had very, very little. And when God first found you in that place, you were not only spiritually empty, you were financially poor as well. And God found you in that place. And it reminds us of where the Israelites were and the promise and the covenant that God was making with the people. Many of us, you may not have been born with a silver spoon in your mouth, or you may not have enjoyed the luxuries or the financial freedom that you are enjoying today. When God first found you, you didn't have a lot of the things that you had today. When I first came to faith, right, I was in NS. And at the time, not just was I in NS and I didn't have a lot of my own pocket money, but I was struggling with a gambling addiction. So I was not just like not earning a lot of money, I was in debt. I owed bookies money, $2,000 plus. So much so that I had to borrow money from friends, right, to return the bookies first. And then every month, as my NS allowance came in, I would return to my friends bit by bit by bit. But I was struggling with a gambling addiction and I had nothing. And that was the place in my life, the point in my life that God found me. I was not only spiritually bankrupt, but I was financially in debt. Can you imagine at that point, right? At that point when I was in debt and I had nothing in my bank account, my ATM had less than $20, I can't even draw anything out of there. And at that point, if God has spoken to me to tell me that one day, if you trust in me, I will clear all your debt. One day, if you trust in me, you don't have to worry about where your next meal will come from. You're going to be comfortable. You're going to enjoy the things of life, and some of them even luxurious things. I'll be like, wow, really? You mean this is possible? And he says, all you need to do is observe my commands. I was like, no problem. Oh, no problem. If you can wipe out my debt, if you can bring me to a place where, wow, I can really be free of all this. It's such a burden. And Lord, if you can really do this, of course, I'll be faithful to you. And that was the place I was in, and that's the place that the Israelites were in at this point. So if you're following the story, this is the situation in Israel at that point of time. God was telling them, they're about to enter a land that doesn't belong to you. I'm going to give everything to you. When you get there, remember to observe my commands. And they're like, yeah, definitely, we'll observe your commands. One of the commands that God gave to Israel at the time was tithing. Leviticus chapter 27, verse 30, it says this: a tithe of everything from the land, whether grain from the soil, fruit from the trees, it belongs to the Lord, it is holy to the Lord. Now, I'm not saying that observe the commands of the Lord is only tithing. God gave many commands to Israel, but today I'll be focusing on this specific command of tithing because we're going to talk about finance and money specifically. This is our series title. So I'm zooming in to this command that God gave to Israel to tithe. The people were commanded to bring a tithe of everything from the land. What is a tithe? A tithe means a tenth. Okay? A tithe means a tenth. So in case your English is not very good or your maths a bit cannot make it, let me break this down for you. A tithe, a tenth means this. If you think in fractions, it's 1 over 10. If you think in decimals, it's 0.1. If you think in percentage, it's 10%. It's the same thing. Okay? A tithe means a tenth. So God gave a command. The produce of the land, whatever is produced, bring 10%. Bring a tenth. Bring 0.1 of it. Bring it to the house of the Lord. It belongs to the Lord. You see, some people have a wrong concept of tithing. And I've seen this all across Christendom. And people think that when I tithe, God will bless me. And I tithe so that God will bless me. I honor God with my tithe so God will honor me back. We don't tithe to get blessed by God. We don't tithe to buy the favor of God. We don't tithe, right, so that we can earn God's financial blessings. That's the wrong concept of tithing. The correct concept of tithing is we tithe because God has already given to us. We recognize that what we have, it doesn't even belong to us in the first place. Some people think that they earn it by the strength of their hands, their intelligence, their ability, because they're financially savvy. But we recognize, as the people of God, that whatever we have in our bank accounts and in our hands comes from God, and we gladly bring the tithe because we are God's people, not to bribe God or not to earn His blessings. That's important for us to understand. The principle is the principle of first fruits. In Exodus chapter 23, verse 19, it says, "Bring the best of the first fruits of your soil to the house of the Lord your God." Bring the best of the first fruits of your soil. What are the first fruits? In the ancient context, right? If you have a harvest, the first wave of harvest, it belongs to the Lord. If you have cattle, right? The firstborn, it belongs to the Lord. The first fruits, your first wave of harvest. So let's say, right, if I just took my salary, okay? Let's say I just took my salary. And in this salary, right, like I get my salary, right, from my company, right? And there are 10 $50 bills, okay? My salary is not very high, $500 a month, right? If I have 10 pieces of this, which is my first fruit? Which of these 10 pieces, right, is my first fruit? But some people will say, the one that you receive first, but my company just transferred me $500, right? They didn't transfer me piece by piece, or they didn't give it to me piece by piece. They just put $500 in my account, right? So which is the first fruit of this stack? Some people say, the one on top, right? Because it's the first one, ma. Well, let me give you this concept. Imagine this. I get $500 from my company, right, as my salary, right? And then 20% goes to CPF, all right? So who looks like the most CPF person here? Okay, Larry, CPF, okay? So 20% goes to CPF, no choice, right? And then after that, I have to pay my housing loan, right? Housing loan should be you, HDB, okay? Housing loan, okay? I give $100 on my housing loan, and then I have to service my car loan. And then after that, I got to pay for my children's education. And then after that, I got my Netflix subscription and my utility bills and all that, right? Then I left with 10%. $50. And I bring it to the house of the Lord and say, "Lord, this is my tithe. God, this belongs to you. 10%. That's not your first fruit. That's your leftovers. You understand? If we start spending and giving everything away first, right? We put all these things, pay our bills and everything, and we have 10% left, and say, "God, it belongs to you." Yeah, it's 10%. But it's not your first fruit. You show that you trust in God more than you trust in God because you're not willing to set aside the 10% for God first, trusting that He can provide for you more than enough with the 90. You spend first, if got something left, right? Okay, it belongs to God. Tithing is not just 10%. Tithing is the first 10%. This is not legalism, my friends. Sometimes we think, it's the first 10%. So once my salary comes in, right, the first transaction must be to the church. If not, my money is cursed. If not, I don't get the blessings. If not, because you never actually tithe the first 10% if you're a Singaporean. Where does your first 10% go? It goes to CPF. So then, unless you go to Hong Lim Park, right, and raise a banner and say, "Return my CPF, you're stealing from the house of the Lord. No, come back," automatically goes to CPF. And then, God forbid, if your payday comes, right, and it's not, you don't have time to transfer the money to a church, "Oh no, Lord." It's not about legalism. It's the principle that when my pay comes, I set aside, I have an intention to set aside 10% that cannot be touched, and then I bring it to the house of the Lord. So practically, when we start to do our budgeting, when we receive our salary, 10%, set it aside. Before you do anything else, when you receive your performance bonus, your annual wage supplement, your 13th month bonus, 10%, set it aside first before you begin spending on other things. When you receive your passive income, your dividends from shares, your retirement income, what ang paos from whatever, Chinese New Year or whatever, set aside 10% of whatever income you have received. After that, we begin to spend. And some of us may be wondering, "Pastor, honestly, if I set aside 10%, and then I spend, boleh out, No more, you know. Practically, right, if I set aside 10%, if I do my expenses properly, and I come, by the time, I'll reach a point where cannot already, I really cannot. And the truth is, that's how some of us, we drop the habit of tithing. That's how some of us, we tithe, right, when we happen to have the money at the end of the month. We tithe when we happen to, you happen to have that amount, right? But you put your trust in all these things, you pay, you enjoy all these things first, right? And then after that, that last 10%, you say, okay, I give to church. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But it's a spiritual discipline. Tithing is a spiritual discipline that we need to inculcate in our own lives, right? That we say, okay, God, 10% first. And if really, right, if we do our sums right, and that's not enough, right, then we got to begin to make some adjustments to our lifestyle. But we say, God, we put you first. In God we trust. I give you my first fruits. I put you first, and I believe that the 90 is enough. I believe that the 90 is not just enough, but it's more than enough to provide for my needs. And if I need to make some adjustments to my lifestyle, I'm willing. And let me remind us, when we tithe, right, we are saying to God that we trust in you to provide for us. We're not tithing to earn more blessings. Say, God, I tithe, right? So you better bless me with more. God, you better give me a promotion. God, you better give me extra bonus because I tithe, you know, I'm faithful in my tithing. It's not to earn the favor of God. Rather, it's to show that as God has set you apart, as God has taken you out of spiritual bondage and slavery and chosen you as his people, this is part and parcel of the spiritual discipline and responsibility that God has for you and for me. That's part of it. So the first thing that we can learn today, right, is that we trust in God, we observe his commands as God provides for us. We tithe because we trust in God more than we trust in what the money and the gold can do for us. The second thing we can learn from today is this. As God provides, remember that everything comes from him. Remember that everything comes from God. And we can learn this from verses 10 to 18. Remember that everything comes from God. Verse 10 to verse 18. I'm going to read out these verses and you can follow me along. When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I'm giving you today. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, when your herds and flocks grow large, and your silver and gold increase, and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud. And you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. He led you through the vast and dreadful wilderness, that thirsty and waterless land with its venomous snakes and scorpions. He brought you water out of hard rock. He gave you manna to eat in the wilderness, something that your ancestors didn't even know, to humble and test you so that in the end it might go well with you. And you might say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth and so confirms his covenant which he swore to your ancestors as it is today. And in this passage, if you take a look, constantly the Lord is saying to the people, constantly in the different verses. In verse 11, he says, be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God. Next slide, please. Then your heart will become proud and you will forget the Lord your God. But remember the Lord your God. You see, the problem with Israel was not that God didn't do great and wondrous things. The problem with Israel was not even that he didn't provide for them, because he did. The problem with Israel was that they had a short-term memory. They forgot very quickly. Very quickly, they would celebrate the success and the providence of God. And when things went badly or when things got too comfortable, they would turn their backs and they would focus on themselves. And that's why over and over and over again in Deuteronomy and the rest of the Bible, God is saying, remember the Lord your God. Do not forget. They're not even forgetting the promises of God. They're forgetting God himself. He says, be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God. Remember the Lord your God. Not even remember His promises. Not even remember His deeds. Not even remember what He did. Remember Him. Because when your flocks are multiplied, everything you own is multiplied. When your herds grow large, your heart will become proud. And you will forget. And the irony is this. The very source of their complacency, the very reason for their complacency is what? Is the blessing that God gave them. It's the promised land that God gave them. The very reason why they become so self-reliant and proud and arrogant and forgetful about God, the reason for that is God's providence, God's blessing in their life, the promised land. Verses 12 to 14 says that. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase and all you have is multiplied. Look at verse 14. Then your heart will become proud and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And that's the irony. The irony of God's blessing is that sometimes it turns people to focus on themselves and their own self-reliance. And if you go further down to verse 17, it says this. You might say this. You might say to yourself, my power, the strength of my hands have produced this wealth. But remember the Lord your God. God is constantly reminding the people that the land and the provision and the blessings and the luxuries that they were about to experience, none of this belongs to them. All of it is from God. And sometimes when you're looking at that picture and you're just reading this as a story, you're like, wow, these Israelites are very jialat, you know. They're so terrible. And yet, right, when you zoom out and look at your own life, our own lives, a lot of times we're like that as well. When we remember where God found us, we were in slavery. We were in spiritual bondage. We didn't have God. We didn't know what we were going to do in our life. Our life was destined to be lived in sin. And then when we die, we'll forever be separated from God. That was our life. And He found us. And He gave us a new life. And for many of us, when He found us at that place, not only were we spiritually broke, but financially we were nowhere where we were today. And yet, after some time, right, of enjoying the success and enjoying the blessing of God, some of us can get to a point where we become proud, where we think to ourselves that, oh, I have this amount of wealth, right, because I made a good investment. Because I worked hard and then I did well, so I earned the promotion and I earned that salary increase. Because I knew the right people and I was able to network and I was able to get this and get that. Oh, because there was this source of income and that and that and that. We start to attribute a lot of the things that God gave to us, right, to ourselves, our own smarts, our own savvy, our own ability, our own work ethic, us. And we begin to think that what God has given to us was all along ours to begin with. It belongs to me. The irony is this, my friends. Some of us listening to this message, right, you were not always like that. When you were younger, when you didn't have a lot, when life was simpler, you trusted God, you know. You didn't have a lot, but you would scream and save and then still give your 10% to the Lord and say, God, this is my offering to you, and give it not with obligation, but with joy and with gladness to say, God, I present it to you. And then on top of that, sometimes you may have gone through a few Building Fund campaigns, and some of you have been in church for a long time. There was a Time Is Now campaign. There was the Breakthrough campaign to pay for Nexus Auditorium. There was Chairs for Souls to pay for Access Auditorium. And this last year, we had This Is Home. And you gave generously to God. Maybe you didn't have a lot, but you say, okay, God, I don't have a lot. I'm going to depend on you. I'm going to live simply. I'm going to not spend as much, but this belongs to you. I'm trusting in you. Some of you even pledged amounts of money that you did not have, and you trusted in God big time. And when you look back to some of these times, you're like, wow, God, you're incredible. You really did this for me. God, you're awesome. Like, I see how you delivered me out of that and you provided for me financially. You can look back to that time. But yet now, sometimes when you have more, when your flocks and herds have increased and all you have has multiplied, your retirement fund is bigger and the amount of money in your account is so much more than those days. Sometimes our heart is changed. It doesn't trust God the same way as when life was simpler and when we had less. And that's the irony, that sometimes God bless us more, right? And yet, as a result, we become proud. And we think that the work of our hands, the strength of our hands, earned this wealth for me. It is mine for my retirement, for my pleasure, my enjoyment, my children is mine. Some of us even stop tithing because your salary gets bigger. The irony is that when you had less, you tithe faithfully. But then when you have more, right? And now you're driving a big car, and now you're earning a bigger wage, or some of you are business owners, and the revenue that is coming is bigger. The irony of God giving you more is that you become less faithful. And I want to let you know this, if you're listening to this message, just because you trusted God in the wilderness of your life does not mean that automatically you will trust God in the promised land. Just because you used to trust God when life was simpler doesn't mean that you will automatically trust God when you have more. Because the deceitfulness of the human heart is that when we have more, we grow proud. And we think that all this belongs to us, it is mine to spend. And even though 10% now means like less in terms of sacrifice to you, yet some of us, we even drop that because if we look at the amount that we're giving, like, wow, it's so big. Never mind, I'll just give an offering. The church don't need so much money, maybe. We rationalize to ourselves, no, I think at certain point, 10%, but now the amount is just too big. Just because we used to trust God in the wilderness, right, our heart can change. And I want to speak to you. Remember how God found you. Remember where you were when God picked you up and found your life. Remember who you were when life was simpler and things were not so complicated and you didn't have as much luxuries and yet your heart was pure and your desire was to honor God. And remember that. Some of us may have lost that in our lives. And I want to share with us that maybe you think to yourself that, okay, I've given to certain building funds in the past. I've emptied out my bank account, I've downgraded my lifestyle, and I've given generously. Now I've done my part. I need to rest. It's time for the next generation, the new generation, to take it up. You know, I've done my part. And I want to let us know that just because God had our heart in the past doesn't mean He has our heart today. And it's important for us to reflect that. Just because we used to give our heart and soul completely to God once upon a time doesn't automatically mean that today He still has your heart. So how do you know whether God has your heart? How do you know? One of the ways to know whether God has your heart is to look at how you spend your money. And Jesus said this, it was so simple. Jesus said, in Matthew chapter 6, He said, where your treasure is, where you put your gold, where you spend your money, there your heart will be also. That's where your heart is. Look at your expense sheet. Where do you spend your money? You spend your money paying for your house and paying for your car. Do you spend your money on healthcare, on kids' education? Do you spend your money on holidays, on fine dining, on eating well? And all these things are not wrong. They're good things that God has provided for you. And we don't want to guilt trip you into saying, oh, you cannot enjoy all these things. But my question to you is that among enjoying all these things, how much do you give to God? How much do you give to other people? How are you generous with what God has given to you? Are you spending on yourself alone? And what does that reflect about your trust in God and your faithfulness to God? Sometimes our balance sheet tells us a lot more about our heart than songs we sing. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Last year, during our This Is Home campaign, we invited a church. Church, we want to invite you to resource God's vision, to fund the vision that God has put in our heart to reach the people all over Singapore, all over the world. And last year, there were many stories of people giving sacrificially and generously, such that above the tithing amount, we were able to collect a total of 1.4 million Singapore dollars to resource the work locally and globally, to reach more people in Singapore and all over the world. Edmund and Alicia, you may have heard their story. They committed to giving 10% of their wedding gifts as a tithe. They were getting married in 2019. And they committed to giving 10% of their wedding gifts as a tithe. But then, because of what was happening for This Is Home, they recognized that everything that they had came from God. And even their union, even their marriage was from God. God brought them together in this church. And they decided to commit another 20% of that to give to This Is Home, just because they're grateful. And they give not begrudgingly, not out of obligation, but just willingly and joyfully. Even though the wedding to pay for and the housing loan and the renovation and the furnishings, but they just gave generously and joyfully to the Lord. Siame, she really recognized what God had done in her life. And when she was backsliding away from God, not doing well, God found her, God brought her back. God's grace was upon her life. And she saw how her parents came to Christ and they were saved. And she saw how even though she made a job switch and career switch and she took a lower pay, yet the savings in her account was increasing. And she recognized that all this was from God. So when it came to This Is Home campaign, even though she didn't have a lot, but she just gave joyfully, willingly, cheerfully. One of the people that I'm mentoring in church, he and his wife were planning to go to Europe on a holiday in 2019. Then This Is Home rolled around and they discussed it, they prayed about it and made a decision to not go to Europe, to take that money and then give it joyfully and generously to This Is Home. So they changed their weeks-long Euro trip to 4-day, 3-night in Bintan. And also, they decided to eat simply, no longer eating at fancy restaurants every week, but they decided to eat simply. Their date nights were more simple so that they can give to This Is Home. And another story I heard of recently, and this is not a This Is Home story, but another very powerful story is how a young man, when he was growing up as a student in this church, he really received a vision of reaching people, fulfilling the Great Commission, and the value of missions. Then something unfortunate happened. One of his parents passed on, and he was left a large sum of money as an inheritance. And then he chose to, as a young man, give this inheritance for it to be used for God's work. And in his words, he said, "I saw how I was blessed by the money given to me. And I didn't want to think that the money, whether earned or given, had anything to do with me being special. I just hope that it will be used for God's purpose and work. As it's given to various parts of the body, I remember that God resources His work oftentimes through His people, and we are both recipients and givers to it." Many people have given generously to the church, above and beyond their tithe. Not just for This Is Home, but over the years, many, many of you sitting in this room, sitting in our North East Centre and West Centre, over the years, you have given generously and sacrificially to the church. This year, I'm going to give you some advance notice. We're going to run This Is Home campaign again this year, and we're going to make it a yearly affair where we invite the church, above and beyond your tithe, to resource the kingdom work. Last year, This Is Home focused predominantly on our North East Centre and New Tech Park, where some of you are worshipping now and listening to this message. And we got North East Centre and New Tech Park up and running. And it's a wonderful place where you can reach more people. And yet, we must remember that God's vision doesn't stop with the North East region of Singapore. God's vision extends throughout the whole of Singapore. We want to believe God that by 2021, we have a center in the east to reach the people in Tampines and Bedok and Pasir Ris. We want to believe God that by 2023, we have a center in the north to reach the people in Sembawang, in Yishun, in Admiralty. We want to believe God that God reaches people not just locally, but we are a global movement. We want to believe God that God reaches different parts of Asia, different parts of every continent as an Antioch of Antioch. So we plant different Antioch church. And we want to believe God that the people of God will rise up generously to resource the vision that God has given to us collectively. As God has blessed you, you bless what God is doing through this church. And I'm not unaware of what's happening now. I know it's a difficult climate financially. Stock markets are going down. Ministers are coming up, taking pay cuts. Some business leaders are coming up, taking pay cuts. And unless you are selling masks or sanitizers or toilet paper, likely your industry is going to take a hit in some form or another. So why I'm sharing this with you is this. Some of you, even if a recession hits, you still have surplus. And in a time like this, you can step up and still give generously in a time like this. Praise God. When a recession hits some of us, our margins might be affected. But we can still somehow make the sums work and still be able to give. But for some of us, it's really going to be challenging. And we may have to make some form of sacrifice, some form of adjustment. But I want to invite you and I want to encourage you, when this is home rolls around in a few months' time, we're not going to do a collection at the end of this service, so don't worry. Some of you are like, whew. But I'm sharing this with you so that you have some advance time to think, to plan, to pray, to talk to your spouse. And whether you're giving, planning to give a big amount or a small amount, the important thing is that it must reflect your heart. It must reflect your desire to see God's kingdom and His vision being advanced through the church. So we're going to do a collection sometime towards the middle of the end of May. And from now until then, you can begin thinking and planning and praying. Remember that at the end of the day, God's not asking for your money. God is asking, where is your heart? And I want to pray and I want to believe that when the time comes, right, when May or June or whenever the campaign is rolled out, when it comes around again, right, that the people of God will not be, scared, and then hoard and then hold. But the people of God will rise up and be generous and give, recognizing that our trust is in God, not in gold, and everything we have comes from God in the first place. You know, one of the leading churches in the world, right, that leads the way in generosity is this church called Gateway Church in Dallas, Texas. And the pastor, his name is Pastor Robert Morris. And he preaches and he teaches passionately about giving and giving generously. And he and his wife, Debbie, they live a very, very generous lifestyle. They have given away cars to people who are in need. They have even given away their first home to someone in need. And people begin to ask him, like, how do you give so generously? Here he is, right, teaching about the importance about putting God first. Let's watch this.
So it shall be when your son asks you in time to come, saying, what is this? Okay, in other words, he's saying one day your son's going to ask you, why are you killing these animals? That you shall say to him, by strength of hand, by a mighty hand, the Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And it came to pass when Pharaoh was stubborn about letting us go, that the Lord killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of beast. Therefore, I sacrifice to the Lord all males that open the womb, but all the firstborn of my sons I redeem. Okay, I want you to, let's just bring this up to modern day. Let's think about this. The son goes away to college. He gets his degree. He comes back. His dad says, hey, one of the things I'd like you to do is take over the books. And so one day the son is sitting in there and he's got the books in front of him. Dad comes in from the field and the son says, Dad, sit down, Dad. You know, you asked me to, you know, take over the books and the business and all. And Dad, I've been going over the books and... Dad, I want to talk to you about something, man. You might not even know you do this. You know, Dad? We all have blind spots, you know? So not accusing you, just talking numbers now. But, Dad, every time one of our animals has a firstborn, you, how shall I say this, kill it. And Dad, I think it's getting out of hand with you because you killed 72 animals last year. And we're in the ranching business, Dad. And this is cutting into our profits. So why do you do that? He said, one day your son's going to ask you. And he said, when he asks you, you say to your son, son, I need to tell you something about our family that you don't know. But we weren't always in the ranching business. We did not own animals. We didn't own land. Son, we were slaves. We were in bondage. But God, with a mighty hand, redeemed us and gave us everything we have now. Therefore, we gladly give to God the firstborn of all of our increase. Now, this was written 4,000 years ago. And this principle happened to me. When Josh was kind of getting old enough to understand numbers and all, and he has this mathematical mind like I do and like his grandfather. And so one day I was paying the bills. Now, we didn't have online back then. And so what I would do is I would write the check first, and then I would set the check, the tithe check, and then I would settle over the side, and then I would pay the bills. But I'd always write the tithe check first and set it over the side and then take it with me to church. By the way, for you young people, we used to have pieces of paper called checks. Yeah. All right. So I'd settle over the side. So I'm paying the bills, and Josh came in, and I'm watching him out of the corner of my eye. And he's reading this tithe check, and he sees the amount, which to a young boy looks like a lot of money. And he says, Dad, why are you giving so much to the church? And I remember this scripture, when your son asks you, this is what you tell him. And I took Josh and I actually set him on my lap and I said to him, I need to tell you something about Daddy that you don't know. But Daddy wasn't always a Christian, son. And Daddy was a very bad man. And Daddy was in bondage. But God, with a mighty hand, redeemed your daddy and gave us everything we have now. Therefore, I gladly give to God the first of all of my increase.
Isn't it right? Everything we have comes from God. And let the life that we live today, let our life, not just our words, be a message to our future generations that our trust is not in gold or what the money can do for us, but our trust is always, always in God. We remember where we came from, and we remember that everything in our future comes from Him. Can I invite you to just put away your things and just rise to your feet all over this place? But no one moving around the auditorium, please. Unless you really need to go to the washroom, I just encourage you to just stay where you are, the Northeast Center, the West Center. And if you're watching us online, just continue to stay for this part of the message, as I believe that even if you're watching us on the screen, that the Holy Spirit wants to do something in your heart, do something in your spirit.